The following is an audio recording of The Drug War Philosopher of the United States of America, a press conference about the war on drugs, published July 25, 2024, by The Drug War Philosopher on abolishthedea.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Drug War Philosopher of the United States of America.
Thank you, Don Pardo. Thank you, friends. I will make a brief statement and then I will open up the floor to termites. As you know, I frequently talk about my own situation regarding antidepressants and psilocybin, etc. But let's get something straight. I do not want anybody's pity, okay? I know plenty of people who have it far worse than myself. I only mention autobiographical facts because they demonstrate how the drug war is inhumane and keeping me from being all that I can be in life. When you hear my story, please think of the millions of others who are going through the same thing, even if they may be unaware of the precise sociocultural forces that are holding the sack in life. I especially dislike the imputation of such pity. Namely, the idea that I am somehow biased against ECT or antidepressants because of my own experience, and that I am therefore embittered and cannot think straight. I do not want my just indignation about the status quo to be pathologized in that way. I am not writing just for myself, but for the hundreds of millions around the world who go without powerful effective medicines because of the hateful and anti-scientific war on drugs. And if you do not know why the drug war is anti-scientific, read my website, please. I've answered that question dozens of times now, in hundreds of essays over the last 5 years. Just a little housekeeping now and we'll be done. Frida Wolf there on vacuum cleaner, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, first question, you, sir, in the Bengal stripes.
Mr. Philosopher, I'm Clarence Hambone from the Kentucky Crawler.
What up, Boney?
Mr. Philosopher, there are those who say that you are being hypocritical.
How so?
You say that drugs are neither good nor bad, and yet you diss antidepressant drugs every chance you get.
Ah, yes, it's an understandable confusion, because there's a subtle point involved here. You see, I have no desire to outlaw antidepressants, nor would I ever suggest that they have no potential positive uses whatsoever. Who knows? At some dose for some people, in some situations, they may indeed be a godsend.
Yes, but...
So I do not hate antidepressants per se. What I'm saying is that it makes no sense to prescribe such drugs in the way that they are being prescribed today. If we have a nation of Stepford Wives, Boney, insofar as 1 in 4 American women are dependent on antidepressants for life, do you realize how disempowering that is, to become a ward of the healthcare state? How expensive? How time-wasting? Moreover, these pills do not allow these people to live large, but at their very best, they simply make life livable. And really, are 25% of American women really so depressed that they would kill themselves without these drugs? If that's the case, then there is something wrong with America and not with American women. As for the nationwide silence on this enormous dystopia, which is, after all, the biggest mass pharmacological dependency of all time, it is understandable considering the billions generated by the status quo, thanks to which neither scientists nor psychiatrists, nor even Rick Doblin for that matter, are eager to point out that the Emperor is wearing no clothes.
Yes, but...
And pardon me, but you just cannot fully grasp the absurdity of the war on drugs until you realize that society does not merely tolerate all this daily drug-taking, but we actually encourage it. Hence, the modern suburban trope. Don't forget to take your meds.
But...
At the same time, I take folks at their word when they say that antidepressants work for them personally. Indeed, my sister and brother both say so, but that just makes me feel sorry for them. I'm sure that those who say that have no idea of the transformative potential of drugs like LSD and psilocybin. If they did, they would be demanding much more from their medicines. And even non-entheogens like cocaine and opium could put a spring in their step without addicting them. Though, of course, they've been brainwashed to believe that they will always be infants when it comes to such drugs. And what if they became dependent on opium or coca by choice, or even by accident? Why is that so much worse than becoming dependent on an antidepressant that does not let you live your chosen life?
Yes, but...
Or maybe they demand much less from their life in general than I do. If that's the case, fine. But please do not let your own low ambitions in life limit my own ability to live large.
Yes, but...
And by prescribing these drugs en masse for all complaints of depression, as if human beings were interchangeable widgets, women are not only turned into patients for life, but they are actually prevented from using the godsend medicines that are now appearing on the scene thanks to the psychedelic renaissance.
How's that?
Folks who use antidepressants are typically not allowed to participate in psychedelic drug trials. They are also generally not allowed to take part in psilocybin therapy or ayahuasca ceremonies, and so forth. And why not? Because of an overblown fear of a very rare reaction known as serotonin syndrome, said to be caused by combining antidepressants with psychedelic drugs. This is hugely ironic, because the people who are most deserving of benefits from the psychedelic renaissance turn out to be the very people who are not allowed to benefit from psychedelics at all. And yet whenever I start acting up and demanding that psychiatry help those like myself, whom they have rendered chemically dependent for life, At best, I receive mock pity, and at worst, I get told to keep taking my meds. Incidentally, that's why I consider antidepressants to be tranquilizers. Because whenever folks are acting up and causing problems, we tell them to take their meds, or in other words, we tell them to calm down, not for their own benefit, but for our own. And it's no coincidence that that's what ECT is all about, calming down the patient, not so that they can live large personally, but so that their caretakers can stop pulling their own hair out when trying to care for them.
Your critics also point out that drugs like MDMA, which you praise, have downsides as well.
Of course they have downsides. MDMA can tire you out. But what the critics forget is that there are ways to deal with that fatigue by fighting drugs with drugs. There are nutrients that can be used. For more on this, read Listening to Ecstasy by Charlie Winninger. But the drug war has taught us to judge drugs up or down, outside of all context. Drugs by themselves, regardless of dosage, concomitants, and attitudes. Neither MDMA nor antidepressants are good or bad, in and of themselves. They are, as best we know, inanimate objects, and no mere thing is good or bad in and of itself. Confusion also arises because all statements in the English language are elliptical. As philosopher Alfred North Whitehead taught us, a person's statements can only be fully understood by taking into account obvious facts or common presuppositions that are not explicitly stated. When I say you are old, for instance, I mean something like, you are old given the way that we judge the human lifespan, etc. So if I ever have been so inexact as to say something like, antidepressants are bad, it is really shorthand for the proposition that antidepressants are bad as they are being used today. I am not saying, as drug warriors do, that a drug can be bad in and of itself without regard for circumstances of use. I am saying rather that its current manner of use is counterproductive and inappropriate given the many alternatives that are available. And if those alternatives are illegal, psychiatrists should be the first people to stand up and loudly complain about that fact, both individually and as a group. Instead, they generally pretend that the antidepressants that they have on offer are somehow good in and of themselves, that they would be the best treatment even if hundreds of other outlawed alternatives were suddenly available. They thereby imply that prohibition is no big deal because they already have a wonder cure for depression. Thank you very much. And that, of course, is nothing more than a self-interested lie.
But then why do you talk about godsend drugs?
When I refer to a drug as a godsend, that too is an elliptical statement. I assume that my reader will understand that I am calling it a potential godsend. See, I am saying that, I know from user reports and history books that said substances have been used in life-affirming ways for ages and that they could continue profiting humanity in similar ways absent government interference. But such compound assertions are verbose and pedantic. Hence, I resort to the shorthand of calling the psilocybin mushroom a godsend. Strictly speaking, however, even a magic mushroom can prove deadly if used in an irresponsible manner, whilst driving, say, or flying a plane. Of course, the drug warrior will attempt to parlay such potential dangers into a call for outlawing mushrooms, whilst I would reply that all drugs have positive and negative uses, and that, again, drugs are never good or bad in and of themselves. This is one of the many reasons why we need education instead of incarceration.
Mr. Philosopher.
Yes, you, sir, in the two-piece lounge suit with stretch cotton.
Yes, sir.
No, yours is wool, sir, I believe. The guy behind you.
Oh.
Yes, Mr. Philosopher, I'm Buckleby Chucklesworth of the Canyon Bee.
I'll take your word for that.
You've been taken to task for essentially saying that addictive types do not exist. How do you respond?
Well, at first, I respond with indignant outrage at having been so monstrously misconstrued.
And then?
Look, I have friends who have issues with this drug or that, and with alcohol too, right? And it's clear to me that they are prone to temptations to which I simply am not subjected in the same way. I like a good drink, for instance, but I seldom have the urge to overdo it. And I'm not saying that to brag, but merely to point out that there are obvious predilections in the world that can help cause problems for people. But until we start educating people and talking honestly about drugs and using drugs to fight drugs, etc., etc., we simply cannot know how many people would normally have problems with drinks or drugs. We've outlawed all the substances and all the knowledge that could help people use drugs and liquor wisely. So it seems premature now to launch out on a search for scientific reasons why people have difficulty with drugs and alcohol. We should first look in the mirror if we want answers to that question. Jim Hogshire says that 10% of Americans used opium on a regular basis before the Harrison Narcotics Act of 1914. They were then considered habitués. After 1914, they were suddenly considered addicts. Now, we could have launched a big study to find out why all those people had a strong urge to partake of opium, scanning their brains and drawing blood samples. Or we could use common sense and say that the government created these addicts out of whole cloth.
But science, sir, science.
I am also very loath to blame addictive tendencies on a single gene or set of genes. Correlation does not mean causation. Just because a gene is correlated with addictive behavior does not mean that the genes themselves are the cause. We've been here before, remember? With this presumptuous reductionism, science assumed that certain brain chemistry was associated with depression, and so they decided that a surgical attack on that chemistry would put things to rights. And look at the result. They created antidepressants, thanks to which 1 in 4 American women are dependent on big pharma meds for life, while depression stats continue to rise. The scientists obviously intervened at the wrong spot in the causal chain when they sought to change brain chemistry to end depression. See, the problem is that materialism looks for easy cause and effect answers, whereas shamanic holism, that is to say the worldview that we Westerners have fiercely suppressed since the days of Pizarro, tells us that the human being is more than the sum of microscopic parts, that the big picture matters and indeed should come first. And the label addictive is so often political in nature. When I was in my late teens, I pleaded with my psychiatrist to give me something that really made a positive difference in my life. And what was the result? They said I had better shut up, or the prescribing doctor would label me as an addictive personality. In other words, anyone who complains about the niggardly offerings of psychiatry's minuscule pharmacy is going to be pathologized as an addictive personality. And let's talk about ketamine for a moment. I was on that drug for several months a few years ago, and I knew very soon that I wanted to use the drug far more frequently than was advised. I loved the dissociative experience. What peace of mind. I wanted to have a nightly escape from reality and relax for a good hour or so. Now, this could very easily have been labeled addictive behavior by an onlooker, but it was nothing of the kind. It was rather my very personality expressing itself, saying in effect, I want to live large and not be stymied by the negative thoughts that hold folks like myself back in life. This may seem like addictive behavior to the George F. Babbitts of the world, those who are content with very little risk and excitement in life, but it was perfectly rational behavior for myself, given my particular childhood, my particular propensities, etc. So many happy-go-lucky Americans find this unimaginable, because they are totally unable to believe that their basic experience of life is different from that of their neighbors. Fortunately, I knew the limits of ketamine and the dangers of long-term use, and so I soon cut back, which was made easy for me by 2 inconvenient truths. First, the fact that ketamine was enormously expensive, and second, the fact that ketamine's potency decreases with frequent use. That experience helped me better understand alcoholics and their desire for excess. I wanted to live large with ketamine. I wanted to feel better. I wanted to transcend my doubts. I wanted to thrive. And that should not be a crime. The crime is when we purposefully make that desire dangerous to fulfill by outlawing the knowledge and the drugs that could help people achieve that self-transcendence as safely and reliably as possible. But the drug warrior wants to pathologize folks like myself for our seemingly extravagant desires, and so they label us as addictive personalities. Thus pathologized, we can be forced into drug-hating Christian Science rehab and told to rely on the thinly disguised Christian God that they call a higher power. In this way, society enforces the drug-hating theology of Mary Baker Eddy as a kind of state religion. Drug use becomes the paradigmatic sin, and the churchy rehab group is ready to receive the prodigal son. This is what passes for therapy in a Christian Science state. Whereas, in a free and humane society, we would be taught how to transcend ourselves safely, with a drug regimen that is contaminate-free and is maximally sustainable without any undue threat to life or limb. Yes, the woman in the green pret-a-porter.
Me, sir?
Yes, Mrs. Savile Row there. Fire when ready.
Yes, sir. I'm Hella Whaler from the Pohaski Sun.
Indeed.
Mr. Philosopher, you recently flew off the handle when someone told you that all psychiatrists would prefer to undergo ECT for themselves.
I did nothing of the kind.
Did too.
Did not. I was shocked, however, to think that this might actually be the case. It reminded me of the conversation between Argan and his brother in The Imaginary Invalid by Molière.
But doctors themselves must believe in the truth in their science, since they use it on themselves. Brother, that's because there are some in their number who suffer from the same delusion by which they profit.
You see, I've always tried to cut psychiatrists slack because I can hardly expect them to share my philosophical concerns about antidepressants. And yet the fact that they would allegedly prefer shock therapy themselves to the use of drugs tells me that they are completely bamboozled by drug war ideology. For it is the drug war which tells us that there is no help for these doctors or for anybody else at all in so-called drugs. Why? Because drugs are evil, don't you see? Which, as I have been at some pains to point out, is simply not the case.
Mr. Philosopher!
Mr. Philosopher!
Mr. Philosopher!
No further questions.